Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
Good morning, Boston. I've always kind of wanted to do that. James Stewart at I Am James Stewart. Mike Sarge Riley at Sarge985. The big story of the wrestling week, Mike.
Yeah.
WWE has a new TV deal in place for Raw and SmackDown as of the fall 2019. Both deals are signed for a combined 5 years and $2 billion. That's billion with a B, capital B.
It's like Mike Felger money.
I think that's just a touch under Felger money.
Yep, sounds right.
But these TV deals, it's USA Network retains the rights to Raw. Fox gets the rights to SmackDown. The presumed move is that SmackDown will be Friday night again. The WWE stock exploded on Monday, closing at almost $60 per share. And that means the company is now worth $4.465 billion. Dollars. Billion with a capital B, and you can spell out billion in all caps. Mike, what do you make of these TV deals?
Well, obviously making the move back to Friday night, that's where SmackDown kind of really put themselves on the map, as you know, for quite some time. Now, just to clarify, Jimmy, do we know if this is going to be live, right? This will be live Friday night?
So I would have to assume that it would be. I don't know. These are all reports that are coming out. We haven't seen an official signed contract, but if it's leaking out, this deal must be either done or pretty close to done.
Yeah.
But to me, that blows the world away. And what it means, how I interpret this, is kind of how Meltzer freestyled on his audio show the other day. He said that these deals and the money that is being invested, he thinks that SmackDown is going to become the A show. When it hits Fox TV.
Okay, well, that if it's going to be the A show, then it's going to be live, if he's saying that. However, though, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't have it live, where they're just getting all this money and they don't care. They'll just put the product out there and just have their regular show. But if they're saying it will be the A show, then yes, it's going to be live.
Well, and that's Meltzer's speculation on this whole thing.
Yeah, but I'll go with that. I'll say it will be. And you know, the fact that they're going to a separate network, too, that really does separate the fact that, okay, now we really do have a Raw. Yes, we really do have a SmackDown. Two separate networks, two separate kind of entities at that point, too. So this is a real big opportunity for both of them to really show that clash there. Love it. Great chance for the net, for Fox and the WWE to co-promote, you know, Fox Sports. They got every other year or every 3 years, Super Bowl, great deal with the NFL. You got a NASCAR audience, Major League Baseball, so much cross promotion. And I'm sure WWE jumped on that in a heartbeat. Tough one to turn down. So good for them making this happen. What do you say, Jimmy?
So the Hollywood Reporter reports the deal, and it's noted that WWE is said to have gotten a higher bid for SmackDown that wasn't from NBC Universal or Fox.
Yep.
But quote, WWE executives are said to have embraced Fox's commitment to heavily promote SmackDown across the robust sports portfolio that includes the NFL and Major League Baseball. Facebook and Amazon had been mentioned as possible destinations, according to the Hollywood Reporter. So the interesting thing is, do you have an impression as to how Joe Buck might promote SmackDown?
Well, whether he likes it or not, he's going to have to promote it in a good way because he's still getting paid from Fox. So if you don't like wrestling, he's still going to have to find a way to put a smile on his face. And trust me, he will. So I could totally see Well, don't forget to join us on Fox this Friday for a new edition of SmackDown. It'll be broadcast from the TD Garden, but we'll have it for you here on Fox. And then in the event of a Major League Baseball game or something, well, you can catch SmackDown this week on FS1 because we'll have the Major League Baseball playoffs on Friday night. So FS1 SmackDown, something like that. It's going to be a happy face-off.
If baseball had base brawls again, then that would be easy cross-promotion, and they just have that banner on demand in their production truck just to throw it up. If you want to see real SmackDown, not this purse-swinging baseball fight right here, tune in on Friday nights on Fox.
There you go.
To answer your question, Mike, I have one concern, and that is the WWE is going to have $2 billion over the course of 5 years, which is insane money. It's stupid money. Yeah. And my concern is that they're going to be more conservative with their booking.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have any evidence to actually back this up, but I felt since I felt like I've been in a WrestleMania hangover since New Orleans.
Yeah.
And the crime to me is how good WWE was from the build to the Royal Rumble, the Royal Rumble through until about a week or two before WrestleMania, and that's kind of when they kind of pack it in, and they're like, we don't really have anything else to promote now, so we're just going to recap everything because you've probably decided if you're buying WrestleMania or not.
Yep.
And then WrestleMania was such an amazing show for me, and I've actually gone back and watched parts of it just so I can get a feel for the television broadcast, and it might be my favorite WrestleMania of all time. It's really between 34 and 28. 28 was in Miami. 28 I absolutely loved because, again, I was biased and I was there. But okay, for so me, that Miami show still holds up.
And I appreciate you being honest, saying that because you were in all those three, that's why those are
Oh, absolutely.
Best.
That has a huge influence on
that.
Me.
Okay, I respect that. That's good.
You know, the counter argument to what I just said is, look at all the money that was pumped into the Greatest Royal Rumble, and that was a pretty good show top to bottom.
Right.
That was $18 million-ish for one show, and that, of course, is across a 10-year agreement.
Yep.
But here's the other ramifications from this. This money pretty much allows WWE to buy any wrestler they want.
Oh, yeah.
And WWE has the power now to control the independent wrestling scene if he wants to. And Meltzer kind of freestyled this on his audio show the other night. Look at what WWE is doing in the UK as an example as to how the WWE might act after this new deal goes into effect. And Meltzer writes, Meltzer mentions that it won't end a company like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, but if there's an All-In 2, which is the show that is being promoted by Cody and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, the WWE might go out of their way to run a building nearby to disrupt it, in the same way that WWE flipped the Hall of Fame in NXT to counter Ring of Honor on WrestleMania weekend.
Right. And okay, well, to your point, Jimmy, with all the money being thrown around there, look at what happened non-wrestling, but in the NBA a couple of years ago when they got that huge TV deal, so much money was being thrown around during the free agency period. And, you know, the cap money went sky high. Look at last year with the NBA offseason. It was ridiculous. All this money, the long-term deals and how much was being paid out, and that's almost the same situation here. So when you get that sort of paycheck from a television deal, and as one as big as this here, the possibilities are endless. So, yes, Vince already did buy his competition. He legitimately is at the top of the empire, and now it's just like, what else can you do? You throw the dead president in there, and that is just going to make it much more powerful than it actually is.
But is that bigger picture, is that good for wrestling that Vince McMahon owns 300 to 400 wrestlers?
It's not, because as you're seeing now,
like, I think we are in a wrestling boom period. And I understand that people are going to say that Raw ratings are down, SmackDown ratings are down. But if you look at the really hardcore fans are really dug in, and wrestling is more available. I had a conversation with Cody Rhodes about this about a year ago, that wrestling is more available to more people now than it was in the Hulk Hogan era and in the Steve Austin era. And we're kind of in the tail end of the John Cena era now.
Yep.
So there's more wrestling in WWE out there, Ring of Honor, New Japan, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, Chaotic, Northeast Wrestling. All these shows are available to the people when they want it, when they can consume it. And I think that's a good thing for wrestling. But if Vince McMahon owns 300 to 400 wrestlers, that's not a good thing. Because if there's a wrestler that doesn't fit their style, they're doing the main event or they're stuck in NXT and they can't go anywhere.
Yeah. And you know this too, Jimmy. I mean, it's just common sense. Competition is healthy. It really is. And
sorry to cut you off, Mike, but I'm not sorry to cut you off because I feel passionate about this.
It's fine.
If Eric Bischoff doesn't take control of WCW and Ted Turner doesn't say to him, Eric, I want you to go head to head with Vince McMahon on Monday night, we don't get the Attitude Era.
No, you don't.
Because Eric Bischoff looked at what WWE was doing and they said, well, we can do this differently. We can do this differently. We have Hulk Hogan. We can go get the next guy. We can have Lex Luger show up as a surprise. We can go counter to everything that Vince McMahon did and did well for a long time. And we think we can be successful, but if nothing else, we can be an alternative to what Vince McMahon was. And when Eric Bischoff and WCW started beating Vince McMahon, that's when, we don't do good guys versus bad guys anymore. And it opened up the creative, as Vince would call it, the creative book. And they opened up areas, shades of gray, and they went all in on different things. It took them a while to get there.
Yep.
And the organic development of Steve Austin helped that. But they went attitude. And one of the main reasons why Vince won out was because they went attitude, and Eric Bischoff and WCW had to go backwards because they were about to be sold around 98, 99, and they had standards and practices on their back saying, you can't use this term, you can't say that, you can't do this, or you have to get approval for this. And that's really one of the major turning points, in my opinion, about how Vince McMahon got ahead of WCW. Plus, between the in-ring work and the promos and all of that, Vince just blew doors on Bischoff. And it's kind of one of the longer-term issues that I see with them having two highly paid shows. They don't have the star power right now. Or at least I don't see the star power. They don't have Bruno. They don't have Hogan. They don't have Savage. They don't have Austin. They don't have The Rock. They don't have John Cena as a full-time franchise player. They think they have certain guys, but they don't. So long-term, this might end the brand split,
which
is a bad thing.
Well, and I think we saw the bad thing on that with Backlash just a few weeks ago, where you try to put them both together again, and it just did not work. So that's what I fear here on the Money in the Bank one coming up next month, too.
But Mike, why did it work for WrestleMania and not Backlash?
Because you had SmackDown people go up against SmackDown people. You had Raw go up against Raw, and you had a six-hour program out of it.
For example, why did I not like the Samoa Joe Roman Reigns match? Because I like both performers, but that match was missing something. I don't know what it was missing.
The crowd kind of controlled that one too. And also,
because the crowd to start that Backlash show was white hot for that Seth Rollins match. And then the rest of that show went to hell quickly.
Terrible. Terrible. But also you shut out the majority of your talent. Like, they didn't have a spot on the card. There was no tag team match. Nothing. A lot of that stuff, a lot of those, Bailey was in the pre-show, Sasha Banks pre-show, on a regular Raw pay-per-view, they're probably maybe in the main event. There's a very good chance they are, but not here. They were not shown any position there. Now, maybe there's some backstage politics of that or whatnot. That's what I worry here a little bit about with this whole TV deal, buying too much of the competition, not giving everyone a chance. But to go back to your point, to counter with that, though,
thank you.
If you're able to buy all the competition, who's to say that they're not able to find that next guy there, the next one to be someone that's going to carry the torch for years to come, kind of like what John Cena has done over the last 20 years, what Stone Cold did to make Vince a billionaire and to change the whole landscape of pro wrestling. Hulk Hogan, who revolutionized professional wrestling. Maybe they'll be able to find that next guy right there with all this money being thrown around.
So it's funny that you mentioned we mentioned the pay-per-views, and there was a report in The Observer that WWE is looking to lengthen its pay-per-views by an hour, starting with Money in the Bank.
Oh, gosh, why?
And there was a story that the now four-hour wrestling window would start at 7 p.m. Eastern time instead of 8 o'clock Eastern time. And in this report, it says other cable providers were also contacted with that information that I just read above. This is what happens when you just cut and paste things. You're just reading totally things out of sequence. Go me.
That's pretty funny.
These cable providers were told that most of the shows would run from 7 to 11 p.m. We know that's not true because they've gone over a number of times.
Oh, yeah.
So with the big four shows running from 6 to 11 p.m., it's unclear whether pregame shows would be dropped or whether that would mean matches would begin 30 to 90 minutes before the pay-per-view would start, depending on the show, as has been the case so far. Collaborating this information, InDemand's website is listing a 6:30 start for Money in the Bank. Traditionally, they do a 30-minute countdown prior to going live. So how I interpret all that information is now on a pay-per-view day, such as Money in the Bank or TLC, which we think is going to be in Boston on October 21st.
Yep.
So now I have to get to the building at 6:30, and I might not leave the building until 11:30 midnight. Or midnight.
Yeah, you're not going to get out of there until midnight, and you won't get home till 2 in the morning. It's almost like going to a Sunday night football game at Gillette Stadium. It's crazy.
And you put in contrast with what NXT does for big shows. They go 2.5 hours, 2:45. They sometimes go 3 hours. But you know pretty much that the main show is going to start at 8 and end somewhere between 10:30 and 11. And you're going to get good top-to-bottom wrestling shows. So why is it that WWE can't use that template for success? I don't understand. Mike, help me understand this. And maybe you can't help me understand this. Why do they keep thinking that people want more of their product when a lot of people already feel like it's overexposed?
Yeah, you know what? I'm just guessing. To take an educated guess, I think they're really riding on the success of their network and the fact that they can control the fact that they can go to overtime if they want to, or if they want to, you know, have an extra segment in before the main event. You know, they have that. I think they have too much of a cushion with power. You know what I mean? Where before,
well, because there's no competition, or well, there's their perception that there's nobody that can threaten them competition wise.
And that's a major part of it. Yes. But I think also the fact that, you know, like I said, they have this, you know, they bill it exclusively on the network, where before pay-per-view, you had that 3 hour window. You had to be done. Years ago, 7 to 10. And now, in years past, 8 to 11, maybe 11:05, that's it. But with their own, you know...
Mike, there was a rule with the cable companies that they had to be off the air by 10:50. Otherwise, they would forfeit a higher percentage of the pay-per-view money.
But with the pay-per-view, with the broadcast stuff, they know they have the power, they can do what they want, and they're just flexing their muscle. That's it. That's all I can think of.
So the question is...
You agree?
I think the lack of competition has shown in their creative booking at times.
Big time.
That they're still selling, they're still doing well money wise. Their house shows are doing okay. Their merchandise is doing okay, but they don't have anybody to compete with except themselves.
Yeah, and if they just kind of figure out a way, which they did with the brand split here, I think that. It does worry me, to your point, with this whole new TV deal. That could be the end of it. It could be. You're going to make Friday Night SmackDown the new A show, but I still think they find a way to keep them both separate entities. I really do.
Well, and I wonder if there's a detail that Fox is getting 3 hours, not 2 hours. Because for that price, and that would water down the things that we love about SmackDown, is that it's a quicker paced show. Everything has meaning on it.
Yep.
They had a fabulous match last night that we'll get to with Jeff Hardy and Daniel Bryan and getting Samoa Joe involved, but that's for a later time.
Mm. It was in a fabulous city too.
Little frog in my throat. Oh no, Worcester's a dump.
I wanted to hear you say that. That was awesome.
But how this affects the wrestlers, right? Mm-hmm. This is an important detail because presumably they lost money when WWE went from pay-per-views getting $50 a month to the network getting $10 per subscriber. So mm-hmm. Colin Cowherd on his radio TV show a few months back mentioned that the WWE has 8 wrestlers who make $1 million or more. So I did a little bit of digging and I've come up with these wrestlers who I know make more than $1 million. I shouldn't say I know, but somebody told me that they make more than $1 million.
All right, you get a source. Go ahead. Who is it?
Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Roman Reigns, Triple H, Undertaker, Randy Orton. 5 of those 6 are part-timers.
Yeah.
Right? So they're doing limited dates. They're cashing in big time. The rest of this list is a guess on my part as far as to fill out the 8 wrestlers who are millionaires. You tell me if you think this is. Seth Rollins.
Close to it, but no.
I think yes. I think he is a millionaire.
Okay.
Dean Ambrose.
It's so hard to say if he is. He hasn't been active for a while, so I'll say no.
So I think for last year he was.
Okay.
And the reason why I think that is because he's had good runs with the U.S. title, the Intercontinental title, the WWE title, and
Shield.
He had a WrestleMania match with Brock Lesnar. So
and
that shows me that the Shield, yes, absolutely. And
last
that shows
fall.
Me that that he's doing something right with his ring work and his merchandise. So him being a $1 million man, no pun intended, makes logical sense to me.
All right.
AJ Styles.
Millionaire.
And Kevin Owens.
I can say yes to Owens.
So I say yes to AJ. I say yes to Kevin. Based on their positioning in the card, AJ is, of course, has been the WWE champion for a while now. He's pumping out T-shirts. He's over like Rover, as the inside smarks like to say.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Owens is fabulous. I still think he's the best performer on WWE television. And he pumps out new shirts all the time and new merchandise. And he's fabulous.
Now, let me give you 2 more, if you don't mind, to think of, okay?
Sure.
And the reason why I say this one here, he is positioned pretty high. Well, he is very high positioned. And last year when he came in, they really pumped him in with a lot of merchandise and, you know, threw him right at the top there right away. Shinsuke Nakamura.
So I know that his base deal, I know that when he went into the company, I shouldn't say I know. I think when he came into the company, he had a 3-year deal for 6 figures.
Okay.
And it was like a 6-figure low side guarantee. So I could see it, but if he was doing big money, if Nakamura was doing big money, they would have put in the championship on him last year at SummerSlam.
Okay. All right. But within the last year, I think he could be in that category now because of all the merchandise he does sell. And I think it's a brilliant move making him a heel now. And he is having all these matches with AJ Styles. So I'll put him in there within the next 6 months. He'll be in the millionaire category. But one guy he didn't throw in, which he will be by the end of the year, Braun Strowman.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Because maybe they're positioning Braun as the guy who beats Brock Lesnar, but I'm not.
Yep.
I'm not sure that they know who's going to be Brock Lesnar yet. Oh,
right.
So I know somebody who has beaten Brock Lesnar in the past is somebody you have a strong take on, and that's John Cena and his relationship with Nikki Bella.
Yes, and Jimmy, it just seems like, you know, I saw John Cena's interview on the Today Show within the last week, and he really... I believe Cena here, and it's in the end, it was Nikki Bella that broke this thing up. You know that, right? It was her that walked away from the wedding itself. Cena seemed very passionate about, you know, having them together and, you know, rekindling their relationship. And he even did say that he would be okay with having kids, it seemed like. He'd be okay with being the father of, you know, their child. It just seemed like he was all for it. He was doing everything he could to get back with her. And he threw himself out there. So Nikki then goes on the Today Show, and she said that she had hoped for a future with John Cena. So it's like, what the hell is going on here? You have two big name guys right there with the entertainment aspect, and obviously the whole world is going to be watching you when you decide to, you know, drop down on your knee at WrestleMania 33 last year, propose, you get the attention of everybody. Then you break up 2 weeks before. So, yep, you got all the attention, which you wanted. Now everyone's watching you. So in the end, Jimmy, I'm going back to what you said right after WrestleMania, that this was a work. All right. And whether or not it was John Cena, you know, putting his stamp of approval on it, this was a Nikki Bella production, hands down. And kudos to her. She got the attention. She got my attention on this. I could have cared less about it up until, you know, reading into this. I'm actually fascinated by it now. And again, genius by Nikki Bella. Genius. Deep down, do I care? No. But I am really into it, though. So this is what they wanted. This is what they got. And there is no doubt they'll be married within the next couple of months.
Thank you for giving me credit, Mike. I appreciate that.
It's about time someone did, right?
Yeah, I know. I need more credit in my life. My ego's taking a hit these days with all these other things that are going on. But as you mentioned, I felt like this has been a work for a long time now.
Yep.
And
yep.
I don't know that it is, but it has felt like it has been a big combinations of TV ratings. And I have felt like John and Nikki were all in for what I would call their type of wedding. Mm-hmm. And then here comes the E! Network over the top rope, and they say, nope, your wedding is nice, but we would like you to do this. We would like you to do this. We would like it to be here in this location, not the location that you guys picked out. Because you know what? Your location isn't quite good enough for what the E! Network has in mind for them. So the E! Network jumped in with their vision of what the John Cena, Nikki Bella wedding should be. And John and Nikki weren't on board with it.
Yeah.
And they had filmed the breakup in the middle of the Total Bella season. And then they got back together a few days later. Mm-hmm. What they may have done, and this is just speculatory, this is just speculation on my part, is they broke up for real. And now that they're back together, because the Total Bellas season has ended its filming.
Oh, yeah.
So what we may find out is that John and Nikki are going to go through with their wedding that they were planning for a different location and a different date. And they may just go off and do their own thing and make other people catch up.
Right, right. And yeah, keep it private, which I could totally see that happening. Totally.
I'm going to read from Meltzer and the Observer on this one, right? This was his report a few weeks ago. Nikki Bella, since moving out of John Cena's home in Florida, has said she is now living in Phoenix with Brian and Brie. But U.S. Weekly said she's living in the Danielson house. She spends her nights at John's apartment. So are we to believe Cena now has an apartment in Phoenix? Because that's sneaking out of Phoenix to spend nights in Tampa suburbs. Wow, he's a terrible writer for reading. I never realized this until this just moment. Like, I mean, I write poor sentences and paragraphs, but I'm reading this aloud, and this is brutal.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to keep reading verbatim from Meltzer. Because that sneaking out in Phoenix to spend nights in Tampa suburbs is a hell of a daily commute, especially considering Cena is almost never home to begin with. Anyway, for those keeping track, People Magazine sources, which thus far have had him breaking up with her, then her breaking up with him, say that they are almost surely getting back together again. And it was just the pressure of the lavish made-for-TV wedding that freaked him out. Luckily, the cameras for Total Bella were right there to get the scripted version of what really happened this upcoming season. So Meltzer kind of agrees with me in certain, even though he wrote that pretty poorly, he kind of agrees with my initial feel that this whole thing was an angle to get TV ratings. And as I just said, the whole E! Network thing came over the top rope, and they're like, no, we're the television people. We know how to do weddings better than you can. Even though in the process of the wedding, it's not about what somebody else wants. It's about what mainly the bride wants. And there's some chirping from the groom, but he's usually told to shut the F up.
Yeah. And, you know, Jimmy, I there was a friend of mine that told me last week, who was actually a DJ friend of mine, too. He does DJs for, wedding events, which, shameless plug, I also do that on the side. Give me a call, sargesports@gmail.com for inquiries.
Well done.
So, yeah, thank you, Jimmy. They did say that, you know, there was a particular person that went up to them and asked, you know, for a bunch of requests and everything. And the person said, I want this song, I want that song. And the DJ said, yep, no problem at all. However, though, he was told by the groom that you are so much easier to work with because there was another DJ that we went through before you. And that guy said, this is not about the bride and the groom. This is about the people here, so I'll play what I want. So when you have something like that, other people telling you what to do, especially in a situation like that in a wedding, of course they're going to turn it off. Of course John Cena and Nikki Bella are going to do their own thing. That's exactly what they did here. They didn't want E! To control their life. They didn't want whoever else, Hollywood, to do it. They're having their own private wedding somewhere else, and that's what – it may happen today. Might happen in the middle of middle of the week. For all we know,
I have felt, Mike, I have felt for a long time that they've already been married, and I've been refuted on that multiple times. But, you know, they obviously, they're a couple, they're an item, they're a television couple, and this is what they are dealing with.
Yeah, there you go.
And so, whether that's fair or not is somebody else's decision, but they have decided to put their relationship out there for the public.
Well, and that's the problem when you do that, because, like I said, the microscope is all on top of you.
So you also have a takeaway about The Miz and how he's been the MVP of WWE for a long time?
I do. Well, you know what? If not a long time, definitely right now. And here's a guy. One, he just had a baby. So I thought he was going to take some time off. He drops the title to Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. I thought that was it for a long time. But holy cow, makes a jump over to SmackDown. Best guy on the microphone. He may have been the best guy on the microphone for, even longer than now, but really starting to appreciate The Miz more, getting the crowd into it. And he's kind of, he is over. He really is. He could be a face if they really wanted to make him a face, but he's just perfect. He'll make you get you the good reaction, and his in-ring skills I love. I think he's the best all-around competitor right now in the WWE and the most valuable guy in the WWE because of those traits right there. Microphone, in ring, and I'm very excited to see what they're going to do with him and Daniel Bryan that we've wanted to see for a long time on SmackDown. That's going to be a good SummerSlam build-up. Book it.
I hope you're right. I'd love to see The Miz in the title picture, and I'd love to see him in a program with Daniel Bryan. I can't disagree with anything that you've said there. I think The Miz has been great. I will point people to the WWE Network, and they did a Raw 25 special. There's some behind-the-scenes footage about The Miz winning the Intercontinental Championship from Roman Reigns on that night, being hustled to the Manhattan Center, and how the fans reacted to him at the Manhattan Center. And it is a fabulous documentary, and if you're a Miz fan, you'll want to see it, and you might get a little emotional about it, because it's really cool watching The Miz and how he reacts to the fans at the Manhattan Center, who went over the top and gave him a hero's welcome when he got there.
Well, there you go, and that show went to hell in a handbasket quickly, as we know.
Yes, it did. my kind of big non-TV deal takeaway relates to the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes. I almost said Cody Rhodes. I meant to say Cody because he's just Cody.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, for those who are just WWE people, allow me to nerd out for a little bit on non-WWE issues for a few minutes here. the Young Bucks and Cody, they sold out their show on September 1st, which is called All In. And according to Cody on Twitter, they sold out in 29 minutes and 36 seconds.
Wow.
Which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And that is, they sold out a 10,000-seat building, which, based on the fact that being the Elite and Ring of Honor and New Japan and all this non-WWE stuff is awesome. And if you look through history, it's kind of the first time that an independent promotion or promoters have sold out a building of 10,000 since 1994.
Wow. That's impressive.
And so what are they doing? They're doing a YouTube show. They have Ring of Honor, who is helping them a little bit. They have New Japan that's helping them a little bit. But if you really look deep, the Young Bucks made themselves stars, and they connected with the audience. And Cody Rhodes went from WWE and aligned himself with those people. And Cody Rhodes went to the independent shows and was willing to work hard and be overly engaging to the fans. I know, being at a few Northeast wrestling shows in Bethany, Connecticut, that Cody would do a meet and greet before the show, and then after the show, he would also do a meet and greet. And so picture this. It's an hour after Cody Rhodes has just wrestled a 20-minute match, and yep. The ring crew has taken all of the chairs and put them back in their place, and Cody Rhodes is still in the middle of the ring, sweating, taking pictures, and interacting with fans.
And I'll tell you what, Jimmy.
That is the goodwill that Cody put forth to go back to the independent wrestling scene and really work his tail off. So I'm so happy that the Bucks and Cody, they worked hard, they grinded it out, and this is at least step one of their reward for it.
And I'll bet you another thing too, Jimmy, that Cody Rhodes stayed until the very last fan in line got a picture or autograph.
Oh yeah, I saw it. I watched it.
Yeah,
I was impressed by it, and I got to have a conversation with Cody about it, and he was blown away that I waited it out and made that observation. And in a world of social media and bashing people, that I would bring it up not only on social media but in a conversation with him, because it jumped at me. And
right. There
should probably be more positive interaction shared with people. CM Punk famously told the story about him and his wife being at a Blackhawks game and somebody yelling, "Hey, Punk!" And he, of course, didn't turn around because it was just rude. But the other 10 people that came up and said, "Hi, Mr. Punk, I'm a big fan. Like, can I have a picture?" And CM Punk's response is, "Well, of course you can have a picture, because you're polite and you've introduced yourself and you've been social. You've been like a real person," instead of saying, "Hey, Punk.
Yeah.
Can I have a picture?" Well, no, you can't have a picture because you're rude.
Mm-hmm. And good for CM Punk.
Exactly. And the big question, because this All-In show is in Chicago, is will CM Punk be there? So,
now,
Mike Riley, I'm gonna ask you before I answer.
Well, we're talking Ring of Honor.
Do you know this is the show that
Money
is promoted
bank?
By the Young Bucks and Cody on September 1st?
Yeah, okay.
This was the show that everybody thought Daniel Bryan was going to be on because his contract expired September 1st. And to my knowledge, he hasn't re-signed with the company, but that's a story for another time.
Yeah.
So, do you think, Mike Riley, that CM Punk will be all in Chicago September 1st?
Let me do a capital Y-E, yes. Book it, baby. And I'll tell you what, Jimmy, if you're a CM Punk fan, you may want to book a flight there right now to Chicago, because this is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime deal. And then I think he goes off into the sunset for good. That's it. Done. It's a one-time deal. Maybe, I could see him at a WrestleCon or something, but this is it, though. Done.
So I think, yes, CM Punk will be there. I don't know what he will be doing, but he's doing a meet and greet there, which actually tickets go on sale soon for that if you're in the Chicago area and you're listening to us, and God bless you if you are.
I'll bet you do.
But I think he's at that show. I wouldn't be shocked if he's doing a promo in the ring. I wouldn't be shocked if he's doing color commentary if they figure out their streaming service. But here's an interesting report that was out on the internet, so you have to believe it. If it's on the internet, it must be true. CM Punk was at the press conference. He was standing in the crowd, and he was in sweats.
Oh!
So if that report is true, there are people who were in the crowd standing next to CM Punk and had no idea.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which I think is awesome.
He's just a regular guy, you know?
And one of the also more notable things from this All-In show is they have announced one thing, and that is Cody will be taking on the NWA champion. Billy Corgan, of course, is the money behind the National Wrestling Alliance, and it wouldn't shock me if you saw an NWA title switch to Cody Rhodes, because Cody and Dusty, NWA world champions, father, son, like I think historically that's a pretty cool note. But Mike, I have a question for you. Name me one NWA world champion.
Ric Flair.
Ric Flair is a correct answer. Do you know who the current NWA champion is?
I didn't even know the NWA was still around.
It's something named Nick Aldis.
Who?
Exactly my point. I have no idea who this guy is. I'm sure he's a wonderful performer because Billy Corgan likes him, and Billy Corgan's pretty good with identifying wrestling talent. But when I was looking through the history of the NWA World Championship, and again, I'm nerding out on this stuff.
No, it's fair.
The name that jumped out at me as the NWA World Champion, and he was in November of 2000, and he held the championship for 38 days, Sabu.
Oh, wow.
Now, you want to talk about wrestling history? Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, Terry Funk, Dory Funk, all the great wrestlers who have held the NWA World Championship, AJ Styles, Kurt Angle, Sabu? Sabu doesn't strike me as a catch-and-catch-can wrestler.
No, and he's an ECW guy, too. I mean, does he even fit that category to have that belt around him, right? Think about that. You know, from up until 5 minutes ago when you just told me about the NWA current champion, in the back of my head, I'm like, the NWA is still around? I had no idea.
Yeah, Billy Corgan invested a ton of money into it, and he owns
They got to do a better job promoting because they haven't heard a word about it.
So another non-WWE note from my vantage point is New Japan Pro Wrestling announced their main event for Dominion. For those who don't know, Dominion is New Japan's second biggest, quote, pay-per-view event. For WWE fans, it's equivalent to either SummerSlam or the Royal Rumble, depends on which you consider WWE's second biggest pay-per-view event of the year. Wrestle Kingdom for New Japan is their WrestleMania. And Wrestle Kingdom is January 4th every year, no matter what day that falls on. So if it's on a Tuesday, that's when the Tokyo Dome has Wrestle Kingdom. The main event of Dominion on June 9th.
January 4th.
What did I say?
5th. It's okay.
Oh, that, you know why? Because it's probably the Eastern time zone conversion, and I wake up at 4 a.m. to wake it up. But please, when I'm wrong, correct me. More people need to correct me because I'm stupid.
Jimmy, I'm just correcting you so you don't hear it from those Twitter trolls. But continue.
So the main event of Dominion on June 9th, 2018, will be Okada versus Kenny Omega in a 2-out-of-3 fall, no time limit match for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. For Okada and Omega, this will be their fourth match. They had their first match January 4th of 2017, Wrestle Kingdom. It went 46 minutes, 45 seconds, where Okada retained the championship against Omega. It was the longest match in history of the Tokyo Dome's January 4th show. Meltzer gave the match a 6-star rating in the Wrestling Observer, adding that Omega and Okada, quote, may have put on the greatest match in pro wrestling history, unquote, and that it was the best match Meltzer had ever seen. This match was also praised by Daniel Bryan, Mick Foley, and Steve Austin. I watched the match. I woke up early and I watched the match, and I thought it was a fabulous match. And at the time, I thought it was the best pro wrestling match I had ever seen as well. Mike, have you seen the match? Are you aware of the feud?
No, I am not. I only watched the January 4th one. That's all I really do keep an eye on there for the New Japan, but something I do would like to watch more of. So this does sound very intriguing, though.
So they had their second match, June 11th, 2017, at Dominion. Okada and Omega wrestled to a 60-minute time limit draw. which was the first in New Japan in many, many years. You can do the research in the Google on your own time. I'm trying to get through this so that I'm not boring people. But I watched it. I woke up at about 5 a.m. and watched it live. I believe it was a Sunday morning here on the East Coast, but, you know, Meltzer gave that match 6.25 stars, which obviously was higher than the previous match, making it Meltzer's highest rated match of all time. I thought for a 60-minute time limit draw, this was awesome. This was off the charts. I liked the Samoa Joe CM Punk sequence of time limit draws. There's a couple Ricky Steamboat Ric Flair time limit draws that are awesome. There are some iron matches out there. I loved this match singular in a singular moment. I love this match, which is why they're doing 2 out of 3 falls, no time limit. On August 12th, Omega defeated Okada in their third match against each other, and Omega won his block in the 2017 G1 Climax tournament with a record of 7 wins and 2 losses, and he advanced to the finals of the tournament, which I believe he lost. So I have already set my alarm for 5 a.m. for that morning to watch the fourth match between Okada and Omega.
Steak and eggs.
Which I think if you are a in-ring match fan, you should go out and you should seek these series of matches. People always say that Steamboat and Flair had a great series of matches. I think these guys for this generation have had a similar great series of matches.
Yeah. Omega is unbelievable. And, Jimmy, now with all this money being thrown around out there, I could totally see them, making a move for a guy like Kenny Omega down the line. Maybe
I don't think he wants to go to WWE.
Well, it's hard to turn down the money.
It depends on if you're trying to change the world or just make money.
Well, he's got a full year to think about this, so I wouldn't be shocked if it happens, though. Think about it.
So I was doing some research because I wanted to explain to – because I think our fan base might be mostly WWE fans. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to do some research into who Okada was. And at over – so for those who don't know who Okada is, he is the longest reigning champion in the history of the IWGP Heavyweight Championship.
Right.
At over 700 days as we're recording this.
That's incredible.
And he holds the record for the most successful championship defenses. Now, Mike Riley, do you know how many championship defenses he has had?
Well, you said over 700 days. I will say 9.
12.
Okay, so I was in the ballpark.
He has had 12 successful championship defenses.
Okay.
So the WWE equivalent to that right now is Brock Lesnar, who has been the WWE Universal Champion for over 400 days.
Yep.
And as we record this, he has successfully defended the championship 10 times. In other words, Brock Lesnar has been a more defending champion than Okada has been. Where is the outrage for the lack of championship defenses by Okada? I don't hear the wrestling internet community bitching about Okada only defending his championship 12 times in 700 days. So I guess for the internet wrestling fan, working 6- and 8-man tag matches on house shows is good enough. Because Brock Lesnar works house shows too. But I guess, you know, the 2 minutes of in-ring work that Okada does is good enough where he gets a pass for only having 12 championship defenses, whereas Brock Lesnar has 10 in less days, and he gets all the grief from the internet wrestling fans. So I'm just looking for a little consistency here.
Well, you're spot on, Jimmy. And, you know, something that popped into my head when you were saying that, do you remember right before WrestleMania when, the kayfabe storyline, Vince saying Roman Reigns has been suspended, going after Brock Lesnar and all that? Vince said on the air that, yes, Brock does get special privileges, okay? So in that situation there, special privileges just to defend the title for 12 times as well. That's all it is. They're trying to build up the character. They're having the race of who's going to hold it for a longer time and then become that top-of-the-mountain guy there who's going to be the champ for the longer and more successful time. That's all it is.
Blah. Brock doesn't defend the championship enough. Blah.
And I'm one of those people that says that too.
Well, Okada doesn't defend it enough either. So.
All right. So, yeah, takes two to tango, right?
And if you can't see me, I'm winking at you because I know how ludicrous that argument was. But
no, that was good.
I get that they're two totally different performers, and I get that, I understand
that. It's good. Your heart's in the right place.
I'm just saying I would like some consistency because you have one champion who everybody loves who has defended his championship 12 times, and meanwhile everyone hates Brock Lesnar and has defended it 10 times. In less days. So I want some consistency. But more importantly, I want everybody to go out of their way, buy New Japan World, watch that match, go through their history. You'll see, if you Google some of your favorite wrestlers on New Japan World, you'll see some of their matches, and you'll see people like Hulk Hogan wrestle a little bit different style than you're used to, the WWE style.
Good stuff.
One thing that I want to close with was something that I teased on Twitter a few weeks ago, and I want to pay it off. And it relates to Bobby Lashley. I'm going to read verbatim the text message that I got relating to Bobby Lashley.
Mm-hmm. And that's your boy.
Yeah. The text message reads, F Bobby Lashley.
Oh.
He dropped Cass on his head, didn't say sorry or reach out to see if he's okay. Unquote. That was the text message that I got.
Okay.
So this really adds to my dislike for Bobby Lashley. I've never been a fan of the performer, and now I'm not a fan of the person, if this text message is true. And I know at some point in my life I'm going to come across Lashley, and it's going to be awkward, but if that text is true, I agree. F Bobby Lashley.
Well, when are we talking about when he dropped him on the head? Are we talking about
the greatest Royal Rumble?
Okay. All right. So, yeah, that was pretty cheap, and we know the whole history of the neck injuries. Look at Owen Hart, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Okay, that's the big one right there. That's bad. You're a professional. This is your second time around in the company, and you crawled your way back in. They're starting to give you a push, and you do that. You know you're going to get demoted. What are you thinking? What the hell are you thinking? It's just not good for business all around. No one's going to want to go in the ring with him. And it's going to kill his, you know, the character of just in general, bad reputation, and it may even ship him out of the company again, Jimmy. That's not good at all. What a stupid move.
And,
stupid.
And to pile on the Bobby Lashley, the anti-Bobby Lashley club that I'm now starting and I'm a charter member of, that segment with Sammy and the Lashley sisters.
Oh.
Was the worst segment in 2018, and it might be top five worst segments in WWE history.
It was pretty damn bad.
It's in the conversation with Vince McMahon dying in a limousine. It's in the conversation with Mae Young giving birth to a hand.
Hold on, wait. Please tell me you're going to say this one with the casket.
It's in the same conversation as Kane's storyline with Triple H over Katie Vick.
Thank you. That was the worst ever.
Heidenreich assaults Michael Cole. The Big Boss Man and Al Pepper. And Al Snow and Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Natalia's excessive farting was a terrible one. And Hornswoggle being revealed as Vince McMahon's illegitimate son. That segment on Raw is in the conversation with all of those that I just mentioned.
Yeah, it made me cringe a little bit too. You know, and someone said it perfect. Like, yeah, it makes us fans cringe or just like, what is going on here? But in the end, you just turn the page. You have to. You know, last year I know the really bad one was Bayley's This Is Your Life segment. That was terrible too.
Yep.
This is hands down at the top of the mountain for 2018. Really, really bad. I think all those you named off there were the worst. The Katie Vick one was hands down the worst of all time. Just terrible. I'll even go with another one. I mean, I know some people thought it was funny. I thought it was stupid. But the Big Show's father's funeral. Big Boss Man jumping on the casket. It's like, what the hell? Or taking away the casket. What is this? Undertaker, the crucifixion, right?
It was an Undertaker. Yeah. It was an Undertaker signal, damn it.
Hey, where'd they buy that cross?
Crosses are us?
Yeah, there you go. Sorry, gotta help Bruce and Conrad, right?
Yeah, and speaking of Conrad, He started a podcast with Eric Bischoff, and it's fabulous. The last 2 weeks, Bret Hart in WCW and Bash at the Beach 2000 are like all-timers. So you guys need to go seek that out and help out our favorite mortgage guy.
And also, Jimmy, shameless plug here, another fantastic interview you want to catch at WrestleCast 985, interviewing Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster, talking about how he convinced Hulk Hogan to turn heel. You want to listen to it. Trust me, he told me the whole story, where he was, Hogan being in his house outside Daytona moments before they sent him down to the arena, how he kind of was the brain behind Goldberg being where he is. And essentially, you know, Kevin being the modest guy he is, the reason Goldberg is in the WWE Hall of Fame now, because of Kevin Sullivan. He's coming back to Boston this weekend too, Jimmy. Where's he going to be?
He's going to be at Sports World on Sunday, May 27th. It's going to be him, Ming slash Haku. They're the same person. Yep. The Barbarian, Teddy Long, Kevin Sullivan. They'll be at Sports World on Route 1 in Saugus from 1 to 3 p.m. If you want to get in touch with Sports World, 781-233-7222. For more information, for cost and everything, you'll probably talk to Phil or Scott. Both are wonderful people, and they will give you the details into how you can meet those gentlemen.
They're in my category, Jimmy, of fine Americans.
What if one of them's Canadian?
It's confirmed they're Americans.
Okay. All of them?
Did my homework.
Okay. Good to know. and I think that's going to wrap up this week's episode.
A lot of fun, Jimmy. Good to be back this week. Looking forward to next week. I got a good topic I want to talk to you about. I'll even tease it right here. Post-WrestleMania hangover still going on. Where do we turn next for the future of WWE? How's that for you?
That's awesome. And it coincides with the text message I sent you maybe a week or two ago about what are you looking forward to in WWE, specifically a match or an angle. So that's definitely something that we can talk about too. And I know a piece of information, but I can't say it, but it relates to something that's happening October 20th or 21st. I'm going to tell you, I know the information, but I can't say what it is, but it's a fun wrestling thing.
I know. I was going to say the Patriots are in Chicago against the Bears.
Yes. So Patriots will not be at the TD Garden for TLC, but there's going to be some fun, wrestling events around the area that weekend. So when I'm allowed to say more detail, I will.
Good stuff.
Some details. Mike Riley at Sarge985. Our Twitter handle is WrestleCast985. I am at I am James Stewart on Twitter. And I think that's going to be the end of the show.
Mic drop. Peace out.